Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Thank you so much for listening. We have a fantastic episode. First time on SI Media with Jimmy Traina, Malika Andrews from ESPN. We will be seeing a lot of Malika over the next couple of months with the NBA playoffs here. She's the studio host for ESPN's NBA Countdown, and she was fantastic during our conversation. So make sure you give that a listen following Malika Salicata and our regular Traina Thoughts segment. Before we get to it, if you missed any previous episodes of SI with Jimmy Traina, let me just tell you, we did a little bonus pod this week for our wrestling fans out there. Cody Rhodes, the new WWE Undisputed Heavyweight Champion, finished his story at WrestleMania 40. Memorable all-time WrestleMania main event. Cody gets into everything about WrestleMania. That dropped on Wednesday, the 17th of April. So if you missed that, check it out if you're a wrestling person. Jim Miller was on the show last week to talk about some ESPN things. And Christopher Mad Dog Russo was on the show a couple of weeks ago. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives, check them out. Make sure you subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. And please, if you can, give it a rate and review on Apple. It helps tremendously. All right, let's get to it. Malika Andrews from ESPN, followed by Salicata and Traina Thoughts, all right here, right now, on this episode of SI Media with Jimmy Traina. All right, joining me now, thrilled to have her for the first time with me on SI Media with Jimmy Traina. We will be seeing a lot of this person over the next couple of months with the NBA playoffs now getting started and dominating the sports scene. She hosts NBA Today for ESPN, NBA Countdown, where we will be seeing her on a nightly basis, I assume. Malika Andrews. Malika, how are you? Thanks for doing this.
I am so great. Thank you for having me, Jimmy. What an introduction. Yeah, we're rolling right into the best time of year.
Absolutely. I have to say, too, whenever I throw out on Twitter to the people who follow me and listen to the podcast, who do you want to hear on the podcast? When the NFL season ended, I remember I said, football's over, because during the football season, I do so much football. You know, who do you want on the pod? And your name is always at the top of the list. So
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm glad to fulfill whatever three users said that. I'm so glad that I could fulfill their hopes and dreams.
I feel pressure to make sure this is a good interview for everyone.
No.
So like I said, NBA playoffs are finally here.
Yep.
And they go on forever, thanks to the NBA dragging it out. What I mean, from now until like June, you're going to be on almost every night, basically, right, with NBA Countdown?
Yeah, I mean, I usually don't think of it in those terms. I get to be on every night versus I have to be on every night, right? But yeah, we're kind of entering a stretch now where this week we're recording this on a Thursday. And yeah, we're rolling straight into Countdown Friday, Countdown Saturday, Countdown Sunday. So it's kind of that time of year where this is new to me, right? I've never experienced this sort of schedule before. And it's awesome to kind of have Michael Wilbon and Stephen A, who are both on 5 day a week shows and also have done NBA Countdown the last couple of years, to have that example. I was actually having a conversation with Stephen A about it the other day, just as simple as, when do you find time to get a workout in? How do you manage sort of your diet on the road, that sort of thing? Because as much as I have covered the playoffs and the NBA for ESPN for going on 6 years now, this will be sort of a new schedule for me to maintain where it's every single day, but it's kind of exciting.
Like you said, this is your first year doing Countdown during the playoffs. And then obviously you'll have the conference finals and the NBA finals.
Yeah.
Were when you got the gig, and you took over for Mike Greenberg, were you shocked? Did you know you were in the running? Did you make a pitch? Because, you know, it's one of those taboo things in sports media, age, when someone's older. You're the opposite. You're 29, I believe, doing this. And it's every article about you is about your age. When you started in the bubble, you were 25, which we can get into. But let's start with like actually getting the gig. Forget your age. It's a huge, huge gig. It's the NBA Finals that you're on for that. Tell me about when that all went down, what that was like for you.
Yeah, it was so surreal. I had been hosting some Wednesday countdowns the year before and filling in for Mike when he, you know, the grueling schedule of get up, when he had conflicts, things like that. And so I'd had a taste of what NBA Countdown is and the importance of the show sort of within the NBA community and viewers and the company. But I didn't know that it was going to happen so quickly. I hoped that someday I would have the opportunity to host NBA Countdown. Giants have sat in this seat before me, and I've always had a deep appreciation for that. And over the last couple of years, we had other hosts help carry the load for Mike Greenberg, with Mike Leaves doing a wonderful job with it as well. But no, I got a call from David Roberts, who's one of the executives at ESPN. And I say this to young people, which I know, hardy har har, I am one, all the time. Sometimes you need somebody to believe in yourself, or to believe in you more than you believe in yourself. And that was certainly, Dave Roberts saw that in me for NBA Today. And then 3 years into NBA Today, he's now seen that for me for NBA Countdown. But I think the thing that meant the most to me, and I texted Mike to make sure he was okay with sharing this, is that I think that so often when you move into a new role, there can be this uncertainty of, I don't want any animosity between how things morph and change, because we're all going to be replaced, and we should be so lucky, right, to be able to usher in and welcome in and help the next person behind us. And that's what Mike did for me. He sent me a text, and it said that he said that he wanted to make sure that I heard from him. And he said that you're so ready and you're going to be so great in this new role. And he said that he doesn't have the least bit of concern. I'm reading the text, what he said, and neither should you. My only words of advice are, keep having fun with it and pace yourself, because it's a long season. If you need some rest, take it. And I'm looking forward to watching you. I'm a text away if you need anything. And that meant the world to me, getting that text from him in that moment, because he has done so much and continues to do so much. I felt at that point like, okay, there's a couple of people who see something in me. So now I'm going to go and try to fulfill whatever that is, even if I'm a little bit nervous.
That's awesome. That's what a great job there by Mike Greenberg. That's
the best. That,
you know, in this business, you don't know if that's always going to come. You know, you could, the silence is also a big part of this business, from when you take, not take, when you end up in someone else, where someone else was. That's really what it was.
Well, and I try to, I hope, like I said, that I am given the opportunity to be able to do that for somebody else, because I won't forget that. And I know how that made me feel. And that's a gift that he gave me. And that's a gift that I look forward to being able to give to other people.
Any nerves at all that it's the postseason, which, oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. What nerves make you, if you're not nervous, you don't care. Isn't that what they say? I think that I have the best nerves. It's not often on NBA Today or NBA Countdown that I get nervous going into a show. But the in-season tournament, where we were live from Las Vegas, and you have sort of the energy of this enormous crowd. I got a great photo from one of the people who works for the NBA, Amanda Thorne, and she texted me a photo of us sort of like our little set engulfed in how many people showed up. And it was a show that I've done every day with people that I have grown up idolizing in the business sitting next to me. And it was in some ways familiar, but in other ways, there was a little bit of butterflies that I had before that show started, because it was different than anything we'd ever done. We were doing a crossover with the great Inside the NBA crew, and I wanted to hold up my end of the bargain in showcasing what these players, their greatness and what they were doing. So I absolutely still get nervous. But Doris Burke told me she still gets nervous before every big game, every big moment. And so I said, well, if Doris
That's wild.
Gets nervous for those moments, then maybe I'm okay still getting a little bit of those butterflies.
That's wild that to me that Doris gets nervous. I mean, she's been doing it so long. She's so good at it.
You know, I know.
It's crazy. What for you, because I'm sure it's different for every host, but for you, what has been the most difficult thing about hosting NBA Countdown? Is it dealing with, you know, getting everyone screen time? Is it the logistics? Is it what would we be surprised to know is maybe a little difficult about that job?
You know, I think the thing about NBA Countdown in my role is I view my job as a service industry almost, that less is more. So I try to pack the most information that I can into moments that set up the guys, Bob, Stephen A., and Mike Wilbon, in the best possible way. And I try to do it quickly. And I think that the thing about hosting is it's not about you. It's not about your moment so much. It's more about how can you be the team player that sets up everybody else. And so I spend so much time with our producers in writing the show and workshopping the questions and trying to make sure that those little teeny bits are able to set up memorable conversation, and working through all of the traffic with the guys so that they know that they can come to me on anything. And I have them in terms of where we're going next. How many games did LeBron play in the season? All those sorts of things that I can be a resource to them. But as long as we have a show at the end of the day that after 30 minutes is like, that flew, that was fun. Those are the things that matter to me more than, if that's how I'm thought of, then I think I've done a good job. And to be able to check your own ego in that sort of way, I think is something that separates. I watch so much of Bob Costas, and I watch so much of Ernie Johnson on Inside, obviously, Hannah Storm. I think the best hosts set it up, get out of the way, know when to step in again, know that really it's about everybody around them and making them look great, not so much about you. And I think that is a balancing act that everybody has to learn how to spin those plates.
Yeah. Yeah. It does seem like every pregame show in every sport has way too many people on it. So the host has a rough job in all of those. I mean,
making
I don't want
sure
anyone
losing.
I'm glad everyone has jobs, but sometimes, I mean, it's not, you guys aren't as bad. You know, sometimes the NFL, you see it and like the desk is about 30 feet long and you're like, what is going on here?
We're pretty solid in four. Sometimes we expand, you know, to add five with Adrian, Woj. Sometimes we expand, I think, to add a player. That's going to be sort of the balance that we're excited to find in the postseason as well, with Bob Myers obviously having the GM experience. But something that's different is not necessarily having a former player on the desk for the entirety of our show. And so finding moments, I think that's going to be important to incorporate our player voices, our player analyst voices, is something that we're going to be looking at. But you're not going to find us going quite 12 wide.
Right. Now, you work with two of the great characters in sports media, in Stephen A., and a guy I love who I don't think gets enough credit for being a character, in Richard Jefferson. Let's start with Stephen A. first. What has it been like to be next to Stephen A. this whole season and see him operate? And what have you learned about him and working with Stephen A.?
I always knew that Stephen A. was a machine in terms of the work that he puts in. But I think sitting next to him, I've definitely grown to have a new appreciation for it. And, you know, I've said this before, I really do have a deep appreciation for the working relationship peaks and valleys that we have had, because I think that everybody who works in a kind of collegial environment, you end up having great days with coworkers, and sometimes you end up having days where you have disagreements. And I'm so lucky to have Stephen A. be that person for me, because there is nobody who works harder. His work ethic is really unparalleled. I admire his ability to sort of jump from sport to sport on First Take and then really know, you know, basketball. He got his roots similarly to that I did. We're both newspaper people at the beginning. And so to be able to see his deep knowledge there has been really interesting and fun to me. And I've really learned a lot. We were joking actually yesterday about who's harder to sit next to, him watching a Knicks game or Michael Wilbon watching a Chicago Bulls game. And I said, I give the very slight edge to Michael Wilbon. He turns into a different person when he's watching the Chicago Bulls. But yeah, he's a titan of the industry. And then there's Richard.
Yeah. One thing about Stephen A, since you brought up, I will ask, when you say sometimes there's disagreements, any memorable disagreements, anything we can, what would have been a disagreement? I would love to know if you can share.
I mean, we kind of see things differently sometimes on both. He was the only one to pick the Miami Heat to win yesterday's game. And at halftime, he was looking smooth sailing and we were all teasing him and going back and forth. So it's kind of a little bit of everything. And so it's really been, we have such a special group. Michael Wilbon is a Hall of Famer. Stephen A is the king of the morning debate and is really, I don't know that he gets the proper credit for the blueprint that he made. Whenever I talk to a lot of classes, and I try to answer all the student emails that come my way. And I try to make sure when people talk about wanting to break news, that students understand the amount of work that someone like Woj puts in that they never see in the initial characters on social media when he is breaking that information there and then writing through a story. When people say that they want to debate like Stephen A, I often say, I don't make sure you understand the foundation that he put down and put together in order to do that, or debate like Michael Wilbon, the foundation that he put in a long newspaper career alongside Tony at the Washington Post. I think that sometimes that can get, that foundation can get forgotten or glossed over a little bit.
I'm curious, when there are show disagreements, not just with Stephen A, if you have one with a producer or someone else, do you go full throttle in standing up for yourself, or does your age play a factor where you think, okay, Stephen A's been in this business for 100 years, my age is what my age is, I gotta defer, or you're able to say, I think this is, you know, BS or whatever?
When producers and I, my executive producer, Hillary Guy, of NBA Today, who I just love, we disagreed today over what should lead the show. Should it be Joel Embiid that leads, or should it be Jimmy Butler's injury that leads? Even though it's kind of coming from the same game, there's sort of very slight differences there in what ends up leading the show. And I felt pretty strongly within the flow of the conversation that it should be Joel Embiid that led the show, just because they were advancing. It felt like there was still some questions around what his health status is, because we had kind of had the understanding that he was sitting the final game of the regular season for management. And then he looked like he was in a little bit of discomfort and told our Lisa Salters he's probably operating more 70 to 80%. And the insight that our analysts had seemed to be stronger on that topic, and then getting to Jimmy very quickly afterwards. And it kind of depends. I don't oftentimes, especially on NBA Today and on NBA Countdown, we have such a collaborative group that I don't often find myself putting my foot down, but I make my opinions known on where we go. But I think that we usually come to some sort of place where throughout the week, when you do this many shows, when you do 8 shows in a week, right? There's going to be, everyone's going to get theirs in terms of what leads and what ends up being in the B block.
Yeah. All right. Now the other character is Richard Jefferson.
Oh, Richard.
Who who I'm a big fan of. He's been on pod. And to me, one of the original great TikTokers that he doesn't get enough credit for.
Well, he made sure on NBA Today that he, we had a segment at one point where he anointed himself, or maybe TikTok anointed him like TikToker of the year or something like that.
And I did that. Sure, I did that in my year end media column for SI.
Sure, Jimmy, yeah. It's your fault then. I blame you. We had to put that all over NBA Today. Like, he is, I'm not sure he gets, he might get too much credit for his TikTok. Yeah. I don't think he's undercredited for his TikTok.
So is he as funny off the air as on the air?
Absolutely. He's funnier.
Yeah.
He's funnier off the air than he is on the air, which is sort of hard to believe. He's so much fun, and he can take a joke. That's what's so great about Richard, is not only does he tease and dish it out and, but he can truly take a joke and make it somehow funnier. And the ability that he has to not laugh. I mean, I am cracking up sometimes at the things he does and says, and he is able to keep this stone face of, what do you mean that wasn't funny? Which only makes me laugh even harder. And him and Kendrick together, Richard, I've told him this before, and I'm afraid to say it again on here and have him hear it and have his already, he already admits the size of his head is too big, but have to get even bigger. It's so difficult to be a really good in studio analyst and be very, very good and entertaining on games, have a deep understanding of what is happening on the floor, be able to digest and disseminate that information. And Richard does it so well and with such a unique sense of humor, and him and Ryan Rucco together have been a great pairing. And I can't say enough good things about Richard, although I'll deny it to his face.
Yeah, I could see him using that against you.
Yeah, you're setting me up here.
Let me circle back a little bit, because I had mentioned earlier, I guess your big break was in the bubble in 2020.
Yeah.
I know for me, when I look back at in my head about 2020, it's like you can't even believe what that was. And in doing a little bit of research, I almost forgot about, like, the NBA teams were locked away in Orlando, and you guys, the NBA media was just, you know, just looking. Do you think about that experience every now and again, and how insane it was? Is it something that you did and it wasn't that big of a deal? What do you have, like, fond memories, weird memories of the bubble? Because for you, I mean, if that's where you got your break, I would imagine it's hard for you to never think about it, but who wants to think about 2020? It was so crappy for so many reasons.
I mean, it was such a hard year for so many people. And so it's kind of complicated for me in terms of thinking back to the bubble as a time that I really got an opportunity, but also so many people were suffering, you know, in so many really deep, horrible ways, losing family members, being afraid, not knowing whether or not it was safe to leave your house. It was a really strange time. Yeah. For me, when I got a call about going down to Orlando, I was living in New York at the time. I definitely had to grapple with and set aside my own fear, because coronavirus scared me. I knew people who had gotten really sick. I'd known people who had passed away. And that was something, setting aside my own fear, was something that I remember having a phone call with my mom and her talking through sort of everything. And she'd said, I hear you on all of that. And you have always been, my background was a little bit more in the news side of sports, working at the New York Times. You've always sort of been drawn to the storytelling, and there is no bigger story right now of more consequence that extends beyond sports than this. Sure. And so it felt important for me to go, And so I did. But yeah, there's when you're there for 107 days, you kind of experience a little bit of everything, a little bit of the good, a little bit of the bad, a little bit of the weird, a little bit of the, oh, that was fun, a little bit of the, I forgot about that. It feels like a little bit of a blur now, but it was such a unique experience. And I don't know that me, a 5'7" young woman, had that much in common in walking through life as a 7-foot-tall basketball player, but professional basketball player. But there, it all sort of got boiled down to everyone was people sort of trying to get by and get through.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody who was there, there is this bond over being there as people debate whether the championship was valid and all of these different things. I think when you were there, there really is no debate as to how challenging it was in some ways, how the civil unrest that was happening in the country at the time and having to grapple with being on the inside of a literal bubble and being insulated from issues that very much affected me as a Black woman, affected the players in a minority Black league. Like there were so many things going on there that I think that everybody that went, there is a sort of touchstone moment that we all kind of come back to that bonds us in a way that wouldn't happen because we walk such vastly different lives in any other place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. It's like I said, I feel like we're almost, a lot of us forget about exactly what that was like during that time. And yeah, it was the combination of COVID. And then, like you said, the civil unrest and it was, and the NBA bubble was going on. It was amazing. They just kept going and going and going. Once they got the bubble established, you know, there was so much controversy about sports. Should they start? Should they not start? But
right. Yeah, or even the bubble, should they take up where are these tests coming from? You have to remember that there weren't enough tests to test people who were suspected of having COVID in the hospitals, let alone, okay, I was getting tested once a day for COVID when I knew that I wasn't experiencing any symptoms. So the NBA had a lot to grapple with. I also think the NBA did a lot of good in that time because people were home, people were scared. People didn't have a lot to do and they were looking to be kept company. I won't even say distracted because I think that that was the valid concern of players when the shooting in Kenosha, Wisconsin happened and there was a question of whether or not they wanted to continue to play. They did not want to serve as a complicit distraction for people who are outside of the bubble. So I'll say keeping company, but they were able to, players were able to send really important messages, not messages that fixed everything, not messages that have magically healed racial divides that have existed in our country for years, not messages that everything is okay, but they were able to convey the importance of sport, the importance of Black athletes' voices, the importance of taking science seriously. All of these things converged and the NBA was able to be on the forefront of all that. And I still think all that was really important. And so to kind of go back to my role, I felt a big responsibility to that, to making sure that people understood what was happening for these players in this tiny little swatch in Florida, and making sure that that everyone watching at home knew at least some idea of what it's been like, good and difficult for players. Yeah. And because of that siloed attention, I think that that is what lent itself to more people watching the person who just so happened to be down there, which was me, and Chris Haynes at TNT.
Yeah. I wanted to, I mean, in a weird way too, I feel like the NBA will always be connected to COVID because it, I feel like maybe it's because I'm a sports fan. It all got started that one night with Rudy Gobert at that, like that's when it all got shut down, you know? So it was, there's always that connection, but I do wonder too. I mean, I would assume, but I could be wrong. If that's your first like really major, super important gig there in the bubble at 25, doing the playoffs and the finals now at 29 would have to be a breeze. Like that to me, you can't get in a more pressure cooker situation than that at 25 years old to be in the bubble. You described every single thing that was going on at that time.
I felt
you got the hardest part out of your career out of the way first.
Well, I felt a sense of purpose, right? In the bubble. Yeah. I felt a sense of purpose when I was at the Times covering Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels, because that happened at a golf facility in Lake Tahoe. And so that fell under sort of the umbrella of my beat and helping out on that story. I felt a sense of purpose writing about the hardships of transgender athletes when I was at the Times. I felt a sense of purpose writing about sort of the summer, the time between Memorial and Labor Day in Chicago, and how deadly that can be for families there at the hands of gun violence. All of those things I have worked on in my career, and they have all filled me with an immense sense of purpose because I care deeply about all of those issues. And I think that they fall under They certainly, you know, there's always a discussion, right, between sports and news. And if sports is the little brother or little sister of the news department, that's more serious. And I've always found that my career intertwines between those things more often than I think a lot of sports fans think about. And so for me, whenever those issues come up, I always feel that call in that sense. And so it's a very different nervousness, right, working on some of those stories than it is working on the NBA finals. Of course, I mean, like I would never conflate those two things. And I think it's okay to have a conviction and a sense of discomfort and nerves that come with going to the bubble, and a different type of conviction, a very different type of conviction, and a more happy, silly, fun care factor nerves that come with the trophy ceremony or hosting the NBA finals. Does that make sense? I feel like I
can hold absolutely
both of those things in vastly different ways. Yeah.
I mean, your resume at this point is pretty wild after all that stuff you just described from, you know, from your days at the Time. You know, you mentioned working at the Times, writing those stories. Did Sports Illustrated try to hire you at one point? Someone, when I told someone you were coming on, they said they did. What happened? Why couldn't we get you? That is a true story.
It is a true story. Am I allowed to tell this story?
Sure. Yes, tell it.
Because
I didn't know it, so I want to hear it myself.
I was leaving the New York Times, and I had been an intern at the Times, and I'd stayed on as a fellow, basically in a temporary position for a year. And at the end of that year, they said that I needed to go and get a little bit more experience on beats. And the New York Times didn't have the infrastructure anymore, as they've shifted and changed and now completely shuttered their sports department to support someone who is learning on the beat, right? And that's something I really hope to see. This is a sports media podcast, is that I think that learning on beats is so important. And to still have those pipelines for people, we've talked about so many analysts that I work with, that's so many people's pipeline, that's so many people's training grounds, that I really think that foundation and ethics is so important. I'll set that aside for a moment. But after that, I was sort of weighing what I wanted to do. And going to Sports Illustrated was one of the pathways that I had been offered. And the thing that I kept coming back to as I weighed Sports Illustrated and the Chicago Tribune was that Sports Illustrated had offered me a little bit more of a nebulous beat. It was staying in New York City, which was a major plus. I never wanted to leave New York City after the Times initially. I had grown up on the West Coast, so New York was my Hollywood. That was where I dreamed of. I grew up on Sex and the City, blah, blah, blah. Sports Illustrated offered me a chance to stay, and they offered me a chance to do features, but there weren't really the parameters around it that I had heard my dream job, the Times, tell me that I needed. And so while Sports Illustrated offered me a little bit more money and the title of Sports Illustrated, where I grew up getting the magazine, reading, you know, all of the great writers that came through SI, I felt like even though it was a little bit more glamorous, I needed to go to the Chicago Tribune and learn from Casey Johnson and learn on a beat, a real true beat, because that is the path that I had seen the people that I admire take. And I remember talking to Mark Spears about it. And I remember talking to Adrian Wojnarowski about it. And it wasn't an easy decision for me. And I feel really lucky, by the way, that so many that I even haven't had an option of two places that I multiple places that I could go. But I just felt like the Chicago Tribune and learning from someone who'd done it for so long, so well, like Casey, was something that I couldn't pass up.
Well, now I'm bummed.
But sorry, Kristen.
It worked out for you.
He was the best. He was everyone was so kind to me at SI.
It's much more fun for you to work with Richard Jefferson than me. So I, you know.
Well, fun most days. When he walks on the set 3 minutes late for a live show, sometimes I'm like, what are you doing here?
I love that. before we wrap it up, I just, you mentioned Woj. Did he, I don't know if he got you your start or did he certainly helped you get your start. Yeah. What was the tie in with Woj there?
Yeah. So, I met Woj. He came up to Nike Hoop Summit in Portland where I was going to school, and I went to school at the University of Portland, and I was writing for the school paper and he had been around. He'd come to campus and he'd interviewed Terry Porter, who was the newly named the head coach at the University of Portland for the basketball team. And when he was on campus, I had just published a story about Terry Porter, his family, ties to the Portland basketball community, what he was inheriting. It was a big front page feature that I'd worked on for a really long time. At the same time, I had been credentialed to go to the Nike Hoop Summit. And so I went, and there I saw him and I worked up the courage to go and introduce myself to him, which is so funny now because he's the nicest guy. But at the time I was sweating bullets and I walked up to him and I said, "Hey, excuse me." And he said, "Oh, hi, nice to meet you. I'm Adrian." And he kind of, "What's your name again?" And I said, "I'm Malika Andrews." And he said, "I just read one of your pieces." And what? And he said that when he was on campus, he picked up a copy of the student newspaper and he read my story. And he was struck by the lead, which I remember being very, very proud of at the time. I'm afraid to go back and read it and see that maybe it wasn't the Pulitzer worthy text that I thought it was. But him saying that and remembering me, he gave me his contact information. And I think, and we just stayed in touch. I think that that's something too that is so underrated in some ways. I think that reaching out to people, I find at least, I remember all the people that helped me. And I'm pretty, like, you probably remember all the people that helped you.
No, I love this story because whenever I get asked by someone like, "Oh, about like getting into the business or how do you get into sports," like about, I always say, you know, I don't mean it the way this is going to sound, but I always say it, who you know is almost more important than what you know. Like you need to make as many, like, as many connections as possible in the business that you can. So the, like just hearing you say that, you know, you didn't love doing it. It took a little bit of courage, but you went up to Woj. That's it right there. Like that, that's all you need to know.
Exactly. And so I think that I my version of saying that is, you may be the most talented writer in the world, but if no one knows who you are, if no one reads past the first five resumes that are stacked up on their desk because they get so many for a position, then sometimes you might stay the greatest writer that writes for yourself. And Woj made sure that my writing, he put my writing in front of his editor. And that's what he did for me. And doing that for me made all the difference in the world, because I ended up being hired by ESPN years later, 3 years later, by that same editor. And so I think that he is always, he knows I've told him how much I had Thanksgiving at his house during, you know, the COVID year that I couldn't go back to California when I was still living on the East Coast. And he's certainly become someone that is super, super important to me. But it's kind of funny when you think about how small this business is, the people who you admired the most, kind of coming full circle to NBA Countdown, the people that I admire the most, I now get to sit next to. And that's why I still get a little bit nervous, is because you want to live up to that. You want to live up to the greatness that's being played on the court and do that justice, and the colleague sitting next to me.
That's a great story in and of itself, that you went up to Woj, you end up getting a job at ESPN. It's almost like it's the icing on the cake that now you work next to him on NBA Countdown. It's crazy.
It's pretty wild. And it's great to sort of, he is one of the best champions that I have had in my career and in my life. Whenever anything happens, that's what I think that people don't know about Woj, is that whenever something goes well, he's one of the first people to cheer you on. And whenever, you know, he hears about someone getting sick or a stumble or a this, he's one of the first people to reach out there too. So he's a relentless competitor, but he cares, and he cares very deeply. And that's what translates sort of across the board.
Does he ever give you a heads up on a Woj bomb? Like if you're sitting next to him on the set, and does he ever turn to you and say, wait till you see what I'm dropping on Twitter right now? Does he ever do this? Is there ever a heads up there?
I will say, the trade deadline show a couple of years ago, and we go on the air, and about 3 minutes into the show, I get a text that says, be ready. And we're going to go to commercial break around 7 or 8 minutes in, but I'd gotten that text. And so our producer kept saying, go to commercial, commercial now. And I kept, and then James Harden news that he was being traded from the Nets to the Philadelphia 76ers dropped. And we ended up doing a 48-minute A block. Because I didn't know what I didn't know, I was gonna say, but I just knew I needed tell to you. Be ready. Yeah. And we were
he
ready.
Didn't tell you it was Harden, but he said, be ready.
Be ready.
I love it.
And so we were ready.
He keeps, I admire him being so tight lipped. I would be blabbing to my coworkers, James Harden's getting traded. What you see
just,
this?
Just be ready.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
be ready.
That's great. I enjoyed this thoroughly. And I thank you for, doing this and dealing with schedule changes. I know this is busy time.
It's the best.
We will
time.
Be seeing Malika Andrews a lot on ESPN NBA Today, NBA Countdown with our crew, Stephen A, Kendrick Perkins, Woj, Bob Myers, and Michael Wilbon. So we will be very familiar with you over the next couple of months. So good luck. Enjoy your first playoffs and finals. And thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Let's do it again.
All right, joining me now, as he does every week, from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV, my buddy Sal Licata. Sal, how are we doing?
I'm great. I finally saw Curb.
Oh, okay. What did we think, finally?
I know, like 2 weeks too late. I absolutely loved it. I saw the final three episodes in order. I loved like the Seinfeld what do you call them? Like Easter eggs throughout the season.
Yes. Yes.
The similarities, you know, the people banging on the car, obviously, all the little things that have the pen, like all the little things that happened. Right. And then, of course, the finale, it was perfect.
How about Leon complaining to Larry about how Kramer would always just walk in unannounced?
Yeah, oh, it was perfect. It was good. It was so well done. I loved it.
I said to Jim Miller last week when we discussed it, I loved it too, but I did feel like, to me, it was like a whole different show once Jerry appeared in the finale. Once Jerry appeared, every minute was bang, 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 just so freaking good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't think of it that way, but you're right. When you see him, because you could have the Easter eggs along the way, but then once you see Jerry, now it is Seinfeld again.
Yeah, yes,
you know, kind of two come together.
Yeah. between Curb being done and Sterling retired, my tweet output is going to be cut in half, basically.
You were the first person that I thought of, and you know how we have that text thing going back and forth. I was gonna text you Sterling retired, but I didn't even, you know. Yeah. I was shocked that it happened so fast.
I broke the news to Sal that OJ was dead.
I go, right. I'm in the middle of a show. You text, I see OJ dead. I wrote back, wow, that's going to be tough to top. I tell my partner, Brandon, I go, OJ's dead. He goes, Simpson? OJ, who do you think?
OJ Anderson?
No, McDuffie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course, OJ Simpson. Yeah. That one in our little game, that's going to be tough to beat.
Well, it's funny too, because people listen to this podcast, because after OJ died, someone tweeted me and asked if I texted it to you. Said already did it. God.
I forget who I was thinking, but there's a couple people out there I could still maybe top you with, but we'll see.
Yeah, there are. OJ was a good one. The Sterling thing, I just couldn't believe it, because it's just bizarre that it's 3 weeks into the season. Now, I called John. So Sal taught me a lesson with John, in that John does not appreciate texts. Now, he told me yesterday his phone, he said he still has a flip phone and he doesn't even get texts.
Wow.
Do you want to tell your story, or would you rather not tell your story?
No, I love this story. I forget the exact year, but it had to be somewhere between 2012 and probably 16 or 15 while I was living in Manhattan. Because I remember I was doing Yankee pregame shows in Florida, but I was living in New York. And I wanted John, who I've known from the fan. He may not remember me all those years, but like I had a relationship with him at the fan. I wanted him to come on the show. And I texted him, hey, John, Sal Licata from whatever shit station it was in Florida. You love to have you on. He calls me and like reams me out for texting him. Oh, Sal, you know, who texts? You really just pick up the phone and give me a call. You want to have me on? And all this stuff. And I remember relaying the story to you. And now, obviously, you know better than to text him. You just pick up the phone and call him.
So here's what happened. I call him up. Phone rings. He picks it up. Hello. I said, hi, John. He goes, hello. How are you? I said, well, to be honest, I'm not great that I'm seeing this news that you're retiring. And he goes, who is this? So I said, it's Jimmy Trainor from Sports Illustrated. Jimmy, how are you? It's been so long. You have to understand, I don't have one of these new phones. When someone calls me, it doesn't give me a name. So that's how my conversation with John started yesterday.
Fantastic. That is fantastic.
I wanted John to come on the podcast, and he said he would do it next week after Saturday. The only problem is I don't know how we're going to do it, because we really don't have the ability to tape via phone, and I doubt John uses Zoom. So it might not be a podcast interview. Maybe it'll have to be like a written interview, but we'll be hearing from John.
Love that. I love that idea.
What a character. I cannot believe I'm going to have a summer where I'm not hearing, you know, in the backyard barbecuing, John and Susan are on the Amazon Alexa. Like, it's just the car. It's
your,
hard to
your life. He is screwing your life up significantly. He really is. Now, he's 86. Yeah. I mean, he's got to do what he's got to do. But you're right. The soundtrack to your summers, to our summers for 36 years, you know, it's
and even when I was home, I put it on the radio.
Well, you were next level. You're next level. You're going to be heard from this one.
I'm going to be very careful about how I'm going to say this because I don't want it to be a thing, but it'll be a thing. But let me figure out how to say this. The entire Yes Network presentation, everything is stale. They never change it. They never update it. They have 8 billion. Like, look at the Mets. Three guys every single game. Gary Cohen, Keith. The Yankees, it's like potluck. You don't know who's doing what. I hate that. Can I get a... I want a booth I can get into. But that's besides me. And, you know, I was thinking about this morning. I didn't see anyone over the last 24 hours talk about the importance of Mike and the Mad Dog to John Sterling. They were the ones who made the home run calls a thing. Nobody else. That started with Mike and the Mad Dog, where after every Yankee game, you know this because you were there running the board, they played all of his home run calls and made it a thing in New York.
During the peak of the Yankees dynasty.
Right.
So it was not only like Mike and Chris in their heyday. I will say, I want to give Steve Summers some credit because he used to do it. And then I feel like Mike and Chris just took it to another level.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
And remember, I worked with Steve too a long time at night. Right. Steve used to, and he was always on after the games. So Steve was really, at least the first one I remember doing it. I don't want to like try to make it a thing between them two. But I remember Steve doing it. Then Mike and Chris did it and took it to a whole nother level. And then everybody started doing it.
Right. I didn't know that. But and also, I mean, no disrespect to all Steve Summers. He was probably doing it at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. That's a tough time spot. Mike and the Mad Dog are doing it afternoon drive.
Correct. Yes.
Different, a whole different ballgame. Yeah.
Right.
Larry and John.
The thing I love about him, I'm going to tell you a couple of stories you're going to fucking love. And maybe you already know these, but the audience is going to love them. They love John Sterling. So the number one thing about him is that he's a character. Obviously, he's an entertainer. He's not a stiff play-by-play guy that falls in line. He did the games he thought was the best way, and that's what made him the best. He's entertaining. He is the most entertaining broadcaster, maybe of all time. And he was exactly like that off the air. Like, when I got to work with him, he used to host shows that I would produce for. It would just be like a random Saturday, and I'm coming up through the ranks, and I would produce for him. On the air, he goes, did anybody... No, Sal Licata is working on the board today. It is to my knowledge that Sal Licata likes veal piccata. That is to my, like, out of nowhere, he's saying, you know, he's giving that would have been my home run call, whatever, like the Sal Licata veal piccata thing. Also, and this is the little anecdote that I know you're going to love. John used to call the newsroom all the time. Sal, can you tell me what the score of the Hawks Mavericks game is?
Oh my God.
Oh baby. Tremendous. He says he's the biggest sports fan ever. He's not kidding.
Used to
call, didn't matter who picked up the old school newsroom before you could get scores on your phone. He would call the newsroom and ask for all the scores on all.
That is tremendous. That is tremendous.
And you can,
he didn't want to be bothered with score phone. He went right to you.
And you could do the math as to maybe why he had so much interest in the Hawks Mavericks or whatever, but
same reason why I keep turning my head to look at the Rangers Tigers game on MLB Network over 8-2-1 in the six market a lot.
Fantastic. What a great guy.
Speaking of betting, the Shohei Ohtani interpreter, the numbers were just, the guy was making like 48 bets a day. Now, listen, I could see that on a college football Saturday.
Yeah.
But my God, what are you doing in the middle of summer? How do you make that many bets?
And how do you do that without betting baseball?
He had a bet. Oh, well, I'm sure he bet baseball. He just didn't bet on the Angels.
Yeah. Okay. I don't, that whole thing to me, it still doesn't make sense. I still don't get how you can. I mean, maybe it's true. I mean, maybe Ohtani had no knowledge of it. I don't know what I'm buying there.
I believe he had no knowledge.
Okay. Did you believe that all the way or just after the...
No, but I've spoken to a couple of athletes and they said it's really not that bizarre that he didn't know that money was missing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. When something like that happens, I always try to reach out to a couple of athletes I know. You know, give me, you know, because they're in a world we're not in.
How much was it total?
I don't even remember. Like,
I mean, $4.5 million, maybe. I thought it was over that he ended up losing, but maybe that wasn't what he actually stole.
Right. I think the net was $4.5 million. Like, he bet 40, lost 30, won 40, lost 36.
Right.
Well, you know, the other way around. Yeah. Let's not do math here and get everyone confused. Did you watch the Billy Joel concert Sunday night on CBS?
No, I saw some tweets. I did not watch it. I don't understand all the fuss about it. Like,
I love that this has become the biggest story. It's probably no one outside of New York cares, but it was the biggest New York story before Sterling retired.
What? Because they cut it short?
Well, and they cut it during Piano Man. Now, okay, so from what I can tell. Now, you know me, I never watch a commercial in my life. I don't know why anyone watches. Commercial comes on, boom, I'm on my phone. I don't know anything. But I saw a lot of people saying that during the NCAA tournament and during the Masters, CBS promoted this concert to no end. Like, there was no tomorrow.
Okay.
Now, they got screwed because the concert was... Now, I knew right away it was going to be a Bush League concert because it was supposed to be on from 9 to 11. Now, I've seen Billy about a dozen times at Madison Square Garden. The concert's almost 3 hours.
Right.
So now they're squeezing it into two. So I knew there was going to be songs cut, which pissed me off.
And it wasn't live.
It wasn't live. It was taped. Here's what I don't understand. There's a lot of things here. I don't understand why they couldn't just show it from 8 to 11 and show the whole thing. For instance, that concert, the special guest that night was Sting. They did two duets. They did a duet to Billy's... Mulberry Street, and then they did a Sting duet. Every little thing she does is magic. CBS cut that. They didn't show it.
Yeah, why?
Then I went through the set list. They cut like 5 or 6 songs. Also, the last song of the night is not Piano Man. Piano Man's the last song of the regular set. Then he does 5 or 6 encores. He does We Didn't Start the Fire. They didn't show that. He does Uptown Girl. They didn't show. And they edited it to where they made Piano Man the last song. Now they got screwed. So the thing was supposed to start at 9. It started at 9:30 because the Masters ran long. So it started at 9:30. At 11:30, they're in the middle of Piano Man. And instead of showing the finish, they cut it literally in the middle of the song so they can go to the local news. And then everyone flips out. Now, I think the reason why people are flipping out is because it was during Piano Man that it got cut off. Now, I've said this many times, and I tweeted this once, and I lost like 100 followers. If I never hear Piano Man again, I'll be totally fine. I think they're off. I'm not saying it's not a good song. I've heard it so many times that I don't care. And I think Billy has like at least 30 better songs. Like Scene from an Italian Restaurant, for example, is 8 billion times better than. So when they cut it off, I remember when they cut it off, I was thinking, that's weird. What is going on? Did I miss something? I didn't realize exactly what had happened. Then everyone was flipping out that the show ended. And the bottom line is this with Billy Joel. There, you know, we can go through certain artists where they have, so, you know, for instance, I know from Bon Jovi, like if they don't play Living on a Prayer, they're going to burn down Madison Square Garden. You can't cut off. That's the one song you cannot cut off at a Billy Joel. I don't care that it's cut off. I couldn't. Right. That's the one song the Billy Joel fan is not going to allow you to cut off. And that's the song they cut off. So then everyone freaked out. And now they're going to reshow the concert on Friday. But it's going to be 2 hours and it's going to be the same exact concert with half the songs edited out. So yeah, what's the point?
They botch that every which way. You have to account for the Masters going long and you can't get out. It just doesn't happen. I've been in radio. So I started in the business over 20 years ago, whether it's CB radio, you can't get out of something at that particular time right before the end. Whether you like the song or I like it, doesn't matter. They built it to be the final song. Show the fucking thing. Don't get 100%. At it then. Or cut something out from the beginning, cut some commercial breaks, go to the news a little bit later, figure it out. You can't do what they did.
I 100%. I don't like the deceptive editing. That is not the final song of the night. That's what aggravates me.
Well, they cut it down to 2 hours anyway, so you were screwed there regardless.
Right. But yeah, but they took, I think, one or two songs that were encores and stuck them in the middle. I don't that.
I see what you're saying. It wasn't in sequence. Yeah.
And I remember back in the day, now this is how old we are, but back in the day, you know, back, I guess I was in college, maybe, HBO used to show concerts live, full, None of this taped editing. If you're going to be in network and show a concert, it's 2024. No one's watching network TV. So don't get all, just show it live and unedited. No one needs to, you don't need to make it garbage.
Well, that's my thing. Like, I've seen Billy Joel multiple, not as much as you, but I've seen him enough. And I love Billy Joel. What's the draw for me? Watch another taped Billy Joel concert that they edited?
Right.
Or Billy Joel performing live on Sunday after the Masters 3-hour concert. Like, if it's not amazing, live, why do I?
Right. It's amazing they don't understand the selling point that showing it live would be.
Because then you feel like you're watching the fucking concert.
Right. Exactly.
You feel like you're there.
Right. I saw a million people on Twitter complaining about how many commercials were in the thing. And, you know, a concert is where you don't want, like, you hurt the flow with all the commercials. See, that's the thing. It shouldn't, here's in this age of streaming, where everything is streaming, they should have just put it on a streaming service with no commercials. That's how you do it.
Right. I would have rather, and you know me with the signing up for this nonsense, I would have rather have bought Paramount for a month to watch that for 3 hours, uncut, uninterrupted, then watch it in some fucked up edited commercial laden way.
100%. How's the new house?
Good. I mean, it's just nonstop, man. It is nonstop. They do work on one thing and it's something else breaks. Like, it's just, you know, whatever. We love the house. We love the area. We're excited to get moved in. You know, this weekend I took a break from doing it to go to see Dwight Gooden. Meanwhile, I saw the ceremonies and I left before first pitch, 40-minute rain delay. I'm out of there.
Wait. Stop. Well, first, before we get to that, did you go to the DMV on Saturday like you were supposed to?
No, because actually a good thing by my wife, Friday night, she said, I don't want to do this. Cancel it. I go, no, we got to get it done. She goes, no, we're not doing it. I was like, all right. Fair enough. And actually it worked because it was nice to not have anything to do Saturday. Okay. Kind of just relax.
But you still have to go one day.
Well, yeah, 2 weeks from Saturday. Right. We have to go.
So let me get this straight. So on Sunday, you go to City Field to watch Dwight Gooden get his jersey retired. Now I saw the pictures. I saw the pictures that you posted on Instagram. Wow, this is shady. So you went for the ceremony.
Yeah.
The ceremony ends, and before the first pitch of the game, you left. That's what you told me.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, I saw those pictures on Instagram. You made it like you were there for 6 hours at City. What a con job.
You asked me the question. I answered directly, but now I'm going to tell you the details of it. Not only because it's my daughter's birthday actually today, right? As we film.
Oh, okay. Happy birthday.
Well, thanks. Whatever. But because of that, my mother wanted to be a part of it. So we had to Sunday morning on the day of the game, drive from Jersey past City Field.
No, you did it.
To pick up my mother, get to my mother's house, wait there for a little bit because, you know, we got there early enough. I wanted to beat the traffic. Drive, get her and her shit, drive to City Field.
We get there at
11:30. Gates open at 11:40. We're there at 11:30. It's a mob scene. Lines out the building, whatever. We get in now, 11:30 in the ballpark, whatever. The gates open at 11:40. We're there, enough time to get food, give my daughter ice cream, all this stuff before the ceremonies even start. Ceremonies start, Doc is wrapping up, rain starts to come. 40-minute rain delay from the end of the ceremony to first pitch. I was only going to stay for a few innings anyway. The rain was like, that's it, we're out of here. Drive back to Jersey, another hour and a half before we're finally home.
Wait, you didn't drive back to Jersey, you had to drive your mom home first,
right? No, she's staying. She's staying. Currently,
Your mom's staying with you in Jersey.
Yeah, currently, as we speak, she's spending the day with Sammy and my wife. You could imagine how that's going.
How's she getting home?
My wife has to drive her tomorrow.
Oh my God. This is a freaking sitcom right out of like the ABC TGI Friday.
It is. I'm work all day. I didn't get home last night till 12:30 in the morning. I'm out the first thing this morning at 8 a.m.
You left Jersey to go pick up your mom in Suffolk County and then went to City Field. What time did you leave your house Sunday morning?
I'd say 8:15. No traffic. We got there like an hour and a half. We were there roughly 9:30.
What time did the ceremony start?
1 o'clock.
Okay, so this is what I want people to understand. Who don't know that
they said in your seat by 1:00. It probably started like 10 after 1:00.
So this is what I want people outside of the New York area who don't know the locations listening to this to have to understand. Sal left his house at 8 a.m. to go watch a ceremony that started at 1:00. Because he had to go all the way from Jersey to Suffolk County to Citi Field. Oh, my God.
Right. I drove over the George Washington Bridge, past Citi Field, another 30 miles or so, maybe more, to pick my mother up, then come back, then go to Citi Field, then back over the damn bridge to Jersey. It was
when you're doing this, are you calm or are you stressed?
I was calm because no traffic. As long as we left the house early, I knew it was going to hit traffic there. And then there was no traffic getting to Citi Field. And then because we left, you know, the joke I was saying is I taught my daughter, I wanted to teach her a little bit of Mets history and go on her dock. And then as soon as the ceremony was over, I taught her how to beat traffic home. We don't need to see a pitch. Let's get the hell out of here.
Mets history. There have been an embarrassment for their existence. What do you want to teach in Mets history?
Well, Doc. Doc's my guy. Come on.
Did you tell
him
he threw a no-hitter for the Yankees?
Did you see any of his speech or no?
No.
He mentioned the Yankees twice, and the place booed. And he goes, I'm telling you, I'm a Met. He was, you know, talking about how he always wanted to be a Met, and then said that the Yankees saw him, and they're like, boo, it was great.
He should not have mentioned that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my God. I'm trying to get past this Sunday, and I just can't.
Yeah. So like, and then that's what I did half my day. Then by the time I get home, I'm fucking exhausted. So I need to do more stuff. I just don't have the time to do it.
Did you watch the game when you got home?
I did. I had that game on. I had a little Yanks. I watched the end of the Knicks. It was nice.
All right. Let's end with this because I was going to ask Cody Rhodes this and I ran out of time. So maybe my guy, Andy Gray, will settle for me asking you because he's obsessed with the train of thought segment. So my guy, Andy Gray, who used to work at SI, used to run the SI Vault, doesn't work there anymore. Had a problem. Had a little incident over the last couple of days where his mom, without getting any permission from him or his wife, cut his son's hair, the bangs. If your mom cut your daughter's hair without telling your wife, what would happen? Just curious.
I'd be texting you, mom, dead. My wife would actually, she wouldn't probably, she would say something, a little something to my mom, but I would get the brunt of that.
All right. My poor friend Andy Gray was shaking. And then here's the best part.
That's a disaster.
Yeah. Oh, he texted the group chat and we were like, this is bad. Like, this is bad. That whole day and night, his wife doesn't say a word. He thinks he's out of the woods. And then the next day he goes, here it is. And he sent this screenshot of the wife saying, please tell your mother, never again.
Man, I'll tell you, grandparents are...
They have no boundaries. No boundaries.
I mean, yeah. Oh my God. Please just say a prayer that none of that nonsense is happening over the next 24 hours or so with my wife. That's
when you said your mom's staying with you, I was going to say now let's not have any issues.
All right. I know. 2 days is fine. That's why she's back Wednesday. 2 or 3 days max. That's it.
Yeah.
All right, Sal. Thoughts and prayers to Andy Gray.
Yeah, he needs them. All right, Sal, good chatting with you. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you later.
Take it easy. All right, my many, many thanks to Malika Andrews and Sal Licata. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you're not a subscriber to SI Media with Jimmy Traina, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Would love it if you left a review on Apple and also did a rate and review. Would help tremendously. And go into the archives and catch up on any episodes you may have missed. We had Cody Rhodes on another episode this week from the WWE, coming off a huge WrestleMania. If you're a wrestling fan, you'll absolutely want to check that out. Jim Miller, author and reporter, on a bunch of ESPN topics on the podcast last week, Chris Mad Dog Russo a couple of weeks ago. So if you missed any of those, check them out. And again, please subscribe, rate, and review. All right, that wraps it up for this week. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.